telling his tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here, subbing in for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks, Maggie, for letting me take the wheel here for a little bit. And, you know, that song, Freedom, I just saw online that Beyonce has given permission to Kamala Harris to use that song in her campaign. So we'll be talking about Kamala Harris's speech right here in Wisconsin at the West Allis Central High School that concluded about 20 minutes ago. Happy to take your calls in a little bit. But first, I've got a great guest on the line. Her name is Nancy McLean. She's one of the leading scholars of the far right in America. She's a history professor at Duke. She wrote a phenomenal book a few years back called Democracy in Chains, The Deep History of the Radical Right's Stealth Plan for America. On top of that, right now, she's helping promote a crucial new documentary, Bad Faith, Christian Nationalism's Unholy War on Democracy. Professor McLean, welcome to the show.
Hey, Matt, it's great to be with you. And I can tell you I'm also a Badger. I got my degree from the University of Wisconsin. I won't tell you the year.
Oh, there you go. I won't ask, but it's great to have that Wisconsin tie. You know, I thought of you while I was watching the RNC last week, and I don't get paid enough to do that, by the way. That was excruciating.
No one does.
That was so painful. But I was disgusted by all the talk that God had made some divine intervention here, not only saving Trump from assassination, but anointing him as the savior of America. What did you make of all that talk?
Yeah, it is very much in keeping with the documentary that you mentioned, Bad Faith, Christian Nationalism's Unholy War on Democracy, which charts how, you know, while many of us talked about the religious right, which was actually coming to power in the years I was in Madison, it was starting off as the moral majority with Jerry Falwell and Paul Wayrick and all of those other people. But over time, it morphed from being a force to try to influence policy in America to a force to try to take over government in America. And that is what we're seeing. That's what you saw on display at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee that was so shocking. And what we're seeing more and more of with things like Project 2025, where this combination of fossil fuel-based plutocrats and Christian theocrats want to take over government and think that it is their right to do so.
And there's a real continuity. You mentioned Paul Wayrick, who in 1980, I believe, at a speech to a group of right-wing Christians, said he didn't want everyone to vote, that they do better when fewer people vote. I mean, that's all,
yes. You
know, that's what voter suppression is all about.
Yes, he is. That footage is in the documentary, and he says, quite frankly, our influence goes up as the vote goes down. So they are very mindful, both parties to this coalition, you know, these dark money billionaire wannabe plutocrats and the Christian nationalists are both acutely aware that the majority doesn't want the kind of world they're trying to bring into being. And that is precisely why they have to disinform people, why they have to rig the rules at every step, you know, trying to capture state judiciaries as well as the Supreme Court, suppressing the vote, you know, trying to hamstring unions, etc. They have to do all this because they know they are a minority force. And the only way that they can win is if the rest of us aren't paying attention and if they get away with these radical rules changes. So, yes, they very much would like to see voting suppressed in a big way, including on campuses. You know, I know you're in Madison, where we have one of the best public universities in the country that was under sustained assault from Scott Walker when he was in the governor's office. And this combined religious fossil fuel right really wants to keep youth voting down. So it's very important that that we alert young people to the stakes of this election, too.
Yeah, that's what the voter ID law here in Wisconsin under Walker was all about. And then there was a right-wing lawyer, part of the Trump team, who was alleging that how horrible it was that students could roll out of their dorm rooms and go vote at a nearby Dropbox. So, you know, the haughtiness, the disdain for young voters couldn't be clearer. You know, Nancy McLean, you've been tracking the far right here in a scholarly way for years. And one of the things that you bring to our attention is the fact that this is not a Johnny-come-lately story, that this campaign of the far right and of the Christian right has been going on now for 7 or 8 decades almost.
Mm-hmm.
How do you track that?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Matt, we could take it farther back. The dissertation that I worked on when I was in the history department at the University of Wisconsin was on the Ku Klux Klan of the 1920s. And that book is coming out in the 30th anniversary edition this summer, taking up the question of Trump and MAGA and the Christian nationalism of today. But so, you know, we can say, you know, that if there is a native force that will be fascist in America, it is not going to look like the German version or the Italian version. It's going to be an American version, and it's going to feature the kind of Christian nationalism that you can trace, you know, all the way back to the Ku Klux Klan of the 1920s and up through the present. And it's also going to feature white supremacy and nativism very prominently. And of course, we're seeing all this with this radicalized MAGA movement, which, you know, is the Tea Party recreated in Donald Trump's image. And I, as a historian, I don't think that we are in a fascist situation in America, you know, like they were in interwar Europe. But the MAGA forces are absolutely speaking and acting fascistically, and we need to take that very seriously. You know, for any major political party to say it will only, to have its elected officials say they will only accept an election they win is already on the road to authoritarianism. But also, it's become a kind of entry pass into today's Republican Party that you have to agree with Donald Trump's big lie and say that he won the election in order to have a chance in that party. And that is absolutely frightening and unprecedented in our history. So we, and of course, all the violence too that this new MAGA movement has used against election officials, as you know well. I believe you had to have your election offices in Madison reinforced. As I understood from an article in the national press some time ago, but the threats on election officials, on public health workers, on school boards, et cetera, you know, the idea that this is coming not from some fringe of neo-Nazis or Ku Klux Klan members, but from people who are working for one of our national major political parties. Again, you know, this would have been unthinkable even 10, 20, you know, years ago, but it's happening now. And so we need to take it very, very seriously.
Yeah, Nancy McLean, I hesitated to use the F word in public and on the air for about 30 years, but I've been using the F word for the last 5 or 6 because the Trump movement, the MAGA movement, has so many characteristics of fascism. The big lie, that was a central element of fascism, the violence that you mentioned, the nativism. And we saw that nativism on display to a ridiculous degree at the RNC last week. I mean, they were passing around and holding up prefabricated signs that said mass deportation now. And the platform of the Republican Party that was approved at the convention was bragging about Trump, if he's elected again, that Trump would bring about the biggest mass deportation in the history of this country. So the nativism couldn't be clearer.
Absolutely could not. Yeah. And I think, you know, more and more people are starting to learn about this Project 2025 that is the Republican platform, really, the policy book for a second Trump administration. And this comes from particularly the Heritage Foundation, but over 100 organizations on the right who know that they were not able to get what they wanted to in the first Trump administration because it was so chaotic and because it still had committed federal civil servants, doing things like protecting our air and water quality and keeping them from breaking the law in innumerable ways, including in the treatment of immigrants and Muslims. So they have come up with this Project 2025. Don't go to the website of the Heritage Foundation. Don't give them the clicks. But Red, Wine, and Blue, the wonderful suburban Suburban Moms Group has a fantastic explainer on its website. You could go there, or you could go to Accountability US, or I have a piece in the Washington Spectator about Heritage and Project 2025. But it is basically a blueprint to get rid of the checks and balances that have characterized our system and to grossly empower a dictatorial figure like Donald Trump, who has told us he's going to be a dictator on day one. So again, we've got to take this very seriously. This is not an election between two candidates or two parties. This is really a referendum on what kind of country we are going to become. Are we going to continue in the democratic experiment that has characterized our history, as a kind of work in progress over generations? Or are we going to take the authoritarian road? Because that is absolutely what Heritage and Trump and their partners have laid out. And Kevin Roberts, the head of Heritage, was very clear about that when he said that he met with Viktor Orban, the dictator of Hungary, in March for several hours with allies at the Heritage Foundation offices in Washington, D.C. And he came out saying Viktor Orban is not just a model, he is the model of governance. And what he means by that is that Viktor Orban showed how to use the democratic process to ensconce a dictator so that you can't get rid of him. Doing what Project 2025 would do, you know, turn the federal civil service into political appointments, rig the judiciary so that it works with the president, suppress the media, et cetera, et cetera. So again, you know, to the extent that historians can sound red alerts, I'm sounding a red alert on this election.
Nancy McLean, I echo that red alert. And it was not coincidental that Trump met with Orban right after the RNC. We'll be right back here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm speaking with Nancy McLean about the rise of the far right. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The path to the White House goes through Wisconsin. Yes, it does.
Rothschild here on the Maggie Dawn Show, subbing in for Maggie, who's off today. Thanks for listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. There's a little Carol King for you. That's a throwback. You're calling my age out here.
Hey, I love Carol King. It doesn't mean that, you know, we're totally fine. There's nothing wrong with liking Carol King. I think she's pretty much, you know, timeless. So
I guess so. I had that album, though. I'm 66, so that's right in my wheelhouse here. I'm speaking with Nancy McLean. Nancy McLean is a professor of history at Duke. She's the author of an incredible book that I recommend to everybody to give you a background of where we are right now in this crazy country. The book's called Democracy in Chains, The Deep History of the Radical Right's Stealth Plan for America. And right now she's helping to promote a crucial new documentary. You should look this one up too. Bad Faith, Christian Nationalism's Unholy War on Democracy. Nancy McLean, thanks for hanging on and being with me this afternoon.
It's great to be with you, Matt.
Tell me a little bit more about Bad Faith.
So Bad Faith, are you getting an echo?
No, it's good. We're good.
Okay. Bad Faith is a really extraordinary documentary that came out this...
So now we lost you for a second.
Okay. Oh, you know, I think you had me twice, hence the echo on my end. Okay. So Bad Faith is a really quite extraordinary documentary that came out this year. People can visit its website. Just look up Bad Faith documentary. You'll find it and the very glowing reviews and a trailer and find out places where you can watch it, including Netflix and that place called Prime. I won't name because I can't stand the owner. But it really, really conveys how this originally kind of religious right force has congealed and radicalized to become the militant military nationalist force it is today, that is wholly at odds with the message of Jesus or Christianity, as a number of figures in the film, including Reverend Barber from my own state of North Carolina, convey quite clearly. But Bad Faith really shows us how all of this happened. And it also starts with January 6th and the criminal attack on our country. And highlights the number of Christian nationalists and the fervor of the Christian nationalists who were part of that attack on the Capitol, and then goes back to explain how we reached this point. But as Steve Schmidt, the former Republican strategist, now Never Trumper, says later on in the film, he said, you know, don't kid yourself. The Republican Party today in 2024 is much more committed to authoritarianism than it was on January 6, 2021. So it is really, really serious stuff. I think I will be actually coming to Madison, details not yet confirmed, but in September sometime, I think either at the Barrymore or the Majestic for a showing of the film and a discussion with the audience. So I hope people will look out for that, but it's really a powerful documentary. I recommend seeing it with people and following the viewing with what you plan to do to prevent this, this scenario from coming into being, because it is quite bone chilling to see it by yourself, I think.
Also bone chilling, Nancy McLean, is the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court decision in the immunity case, which grants the president, whether it's Trump or anybody, enormous powers that aren't in the Constitution, really authoritarian powers. Mm-hmm. And that too has been a project. That is, by that I mean the capturing of the U.S. Supreme Court has been a project of the far right for decades, as has the capturing of state Supreme Courts. Talk a little bit about that kind of strategic approach that the far right has had.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Matt. The figure that I wrote about in Democracy in Chains, this Southern political economist named James Buchanan, would tell people from the 1970s forward on his side, on the right, including donors like Charles Koch, if you don't like the outcome of public policy over a long period of time, stop focusing on who rules and start thinking about the rules and how to change the rules to get what you want. And he actually said that the kind of rules changes needed to get the world that they wanted would be akin to a constitutional revolution. The changes were so, so sweeping. So that is a project that Charles Koch and other donors on the right, but Koch having a very strong presence, has been undertaking since the 1970s. Funding organizations like the misnamed Institute for Justice, which wants to bring in the pre-New Deal Constitution, funding the Federalist Society, funding the Judicial Crisis Network that has gotten these far-right justices seated, and much, much more. And so they now have captured the Supreme Court majority. That 6-3 majority is donor-bought and donor-seated. The last three came from a man named Leonard Leo, who has had tons of money from the right and is much in the news these days. But that plan to capture the judiciary, to rewrite a constitutional understanding and basically tear up, almost a century of jurisprudence, that project is well underway. And I should say, too, I'm not the only one saying this. There are many people on this beat. And one of the most powerful voices is Rhode Island's Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, who has a book called The Scheme that talks about how exactly the right went about, this plutocratic fossil fuel and Christian nationalist right went about capturing that court majority. As you know, and I know, because both of our state judiciaries were captured, fortunately, yours is no longer. They also focused on capturing state judiciaries because they understood that honest state judiciaries that were, treating us all as equals under the law, those were a threat to this project. And that is why they went after them with a vengeance. And in the case of North Carolina, changed them from nonpartisan races to partisan races, into which they pumped a ton of money to get their chosen candidate seated on the courts. So we have ahead of us a big job of court reform that we need to take up. Hopefully as soon as there's a victory in November.
And how do we get to victory in November?
Well, there are many things that we need to do. I mean, one thing that we need to do is work smart in a way that we didn't in, say, 2010 or 2012, when the right was very ready to capture power at the state level. You know, these guys are rich, right? They don't waste money. They're like, hey, we can get so much power at the state level we could never get in Washington. So beginning in 2010 with that big, it was called Project Red Map, they made a huge play for state legislatures, captured 30 of them. As you know, we've gotten some back, but not enough. And they understood, the right understood, that the state level is where so much crucial policy making happens, including who gets to vote, election, how elections are run, et cetera. So we've got to get back all those state legislatures as a first step of business, and also get to work now on all of these races.
Well, I think that's good advice for all of us. I want to thank you, Nancy McLean, professor at Duke, author of a great book, Democracy in Chains. Go look it up and check out the movie she's talking about, the documentary, Bad Faith, Christian Nationalism's Unholy War on Democracy. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in for Maggie Dawn on The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'll be right back with Angela Lang of Block. I'm excited to talk to her.
It has truly been one of the greatest honors of my life to serve as vice president to our President Joe Biden.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Maggie's off today, and she was kind enough to let me be behind the mic, and I'm joined by the dancing Angela Lang.
It's a good song. It's a good song. How could you not dance to it?
Yeah, CeCe's great. Also, it's pretty much awesome. It's finally, we got Kamala.
There you go. That's Brian in the studio. Brian, who keeps everything going here at Civic Media. I call him the Drew Holiday of Civic Media. Put that on your business card,
there
Brian.
There you go.
I will gladly take that.
All right, there you go. Angela Lang is the executive director of Block, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. She's one of the best and bravest organizers I know. She's also an award-winning author. Last year, she won a Milwaukee Press Club Award for Best Editorial, which she wrote for Dan Schaefer's Recombobulation. I'll say that 10 times. Area. Angela Lang, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I got to get your reaction to the big news of the week.
What? There's news.
It's been a crazy couple of weeks of news.
Gosh.
Kamala Harris.
Yes. I have not seen people so excited this election cycle till I have in the last couple of days. And I intentionally kind of waited a little bit to see how folks would respond and react. And then there was the Black Women for Kamala Zoom call with 44,000 Black women.
I heard about that on Joy Reid.
Yes. Raised, I think, $1.5 million in 2 hours. Last night, Black men said, okay, great. We'll do the same thing. Something similar. I'm hearing more and more of different folks organizing, coming together, feeling fired up and actually feeling that there's a bit of hope in this really dark time, that it's not just, okay, let's try to just stop fascism, right? People actually feel hopeful and understanding that this could be the moment that we make history in electing the first woman and the first Black woman president. That is huge.
I know I was exhilarated by it. My wife Jean was exhilarated by it when we were watching the news. I caught the headline at NewYorkTimes.com almost a minute after Biden said he was dropping out, which is something I was begging for certainly since that horrible debate. And I took a lot of grief for it from some of my Democratic Facebook sure. friends. But the funny thing about Facebook, as soon as he got out and minutes later endorsed Kamala Harris, Facebook went nuts
yeah.
for Kamala Harris.
My Facebook feed went nuts. My phone was blowing up. You know, even some of the most progressive folks that may not have agreed with some of her past records and her being a prosecutor, there was a glimmer of hope there, you know. And I think what I've been having conversations with folks is that multiple truths can exist right now. We can say, you know what, you know, she was a cop and, you know, prosecutor, and there should be challenges to that. And absolutely, she should be able to talk about how she's evolved on the issue. And at the same time, we can understand that we're not going to eat our own. We're all going to fall in line because of what is at risk. But multiple things can be true at the same time, I think.
Yeah, it was just first just a huge exhale when Biden was getting out, and then joy and hope, which are two sentiments we haven't felt on the Democratic side or the progressive side here for a while, because it was
long time.
It was such a death march going with Biden. I mean, I'm sorry, but he was going to take us down with him. And it was clear, abundantly clear, after that fatal debate performance. I know he's done a lot of good things, but.
And yeah. I will say, you know, as someone that has not always agreed with Biden, and at no point was he ever my first choice this time or last time, but I have a lot of respect for his decision and for understanding the greater picture and not being selfish. And I think understanding the fate of the country. And I think a lot of folks also feel for him. I think we all know, you know, aging loved ones that have to give up something that they love. And so from a humanity standpoint, I think there's a lot of respect and sympathy and empathy going out.
Yeah, it was certainly a heroic thing to do that he did. And he'll be remembered for it.
Yeah.
So if you want to join the conversation, by the way, you can call us. It's 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm speaking with Angela Lang here on the Civic Media Radio Network. What do you think she brings other than exciting the base?
I think she just brings a level of enthusiasm, right? Not to continue to harp on it, but, you know, she's younger. There's a certain level of enthusiasm. I think we've all seen the pictures of her dancing and laughing and having fun and connecting with folks. And there's just like a certain energy I think she brings. I think we all have seen the power of her sorority, the AKAs. And I think being able to kind of connect that, she kind of feels, you know, part of our community. We feel that she is one of us. And I think there's a certain level of excitement that I think is palpable in the air.
Yeah, it's just been such a change, such a welcome change, such a breath of fresh air that she's brought and Joe Biden helped bring.
Absolutely.
Over the last few days. Please join the conversation at 855-752-4842. We've got Don from Milwaukee on the line. Don, what's on your mind?
Hi, Matt. Yeah, I just heard the speech from Kamala Harris, and I'm all fired up. I was just thinking, you know, I had a crazy thought. In her speech, she mentioned for the people a lot. And, well, remember Barack Obama had Yes, We Can, and then we got that dirtbag's got that slogan, Make America Great Again. I was just wondering, it sounds kind of corny. We could say Kamala Harris for the people. But anyhow, it's just a goofy idea, but I just thought I'd bring it up.
Don, and thanks for the call, Don from Milwaukee. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, you bet.
You know, for the people. I mean, she said we are a people-powered campaign, and she will have a people-first presidency. Mm-hmm. Those were a couple of the great lines from her speech at West Allis Central High School this afternoon. Angela, were you able to listen to that speech?
I've heard bits and pieces of it, and I'm excited to sit down and listen to it more. But yeah, I actually agree with that caller. I think the tone was very much, I understand the role of Wisconsin, I understand the role of Milwaukee. And, you know, people asked like how significant it was that she was coming here. I said it's a pretty astute analysis of the role of Milwaukee and how we play into the larger state. But then also what happens in Wisconsin can flip and impact the entire country. And that line directly comes through the Black and brown communities, the heart of Milwaukee. And then she knew that.
Yeah, as she said at the very top, the path to the White House goes through Wisconsin.
Yep.
And does that, is that intimidating for you?
The path to the White House goes through Wisconsin. Yes, it does.
It sounds great. We know it. And it's something I have told my team for years, you know, not to add an extra layer of pressure, but also to feel the pressure, to understand that, but then also to feel the weight of the voice and the power that we have. And, you know, there's something about it when she says it. I've been saying it all the time, but, you know, I believe it. And I think that she actually means it and feels it when she says it. And I'm curious to see how that continues to play out.
Yeah. A mutual friend of ours, Lisa Lucas from All In Wisconsin, said 4 years ago that the weight of the country is on her, the weight of the world is on her shoulders. I think that's kind of hard to carry when you're going to bed at night.
Yeah, a little bit. Lots of therapy. Shout out to my therapist every Friday.
I'm a believer.
Yes. It's a rough time, and it's a dark time. And I think, you know, whatever criticism people have about her past, I think it's worth something to just take a moment and to have a moment of levity, and that, you know, we can challenge and, you know, push, you know, as much as we can later. But it's okay to take a moment in this dark time to be kind of happy and a little cautiously hopeful. It's okay to do that.
We need the hope. We need the happy. We need the celebration. I have just been feeling all this joy from people on our side.
Yeah.
Over the last few days, which is exhilarating. We had a few people over for dinner the other night. We were all toasting.
Everyone's talking about it. Yeah.
Toasting it. Before that, there was the horrific Republican National Convention.
In contrast, yep.
Here, and what a show that was. What was your reaction to it?
It was a show. It was a performance. It was a circus. I was lucky enough to be able to take my team out of town because we didn't feel safe, and our ambassadors worked from home because our team is Black, and we just didn't feel safe. And so we watched everything very closely from afar. I watched that 93-minute rambling speech. Oof. I was very interested in seeing how this man had a near-death experience. Does that change someone? Does that change how hateful that man is? And he started off very changed, I think, in the very beginning. And I had a little bit of hope, like, wow, okay, maybe. And then very quickly, it devolved into the Donald Trump that we know and hate, quite frankly. And I'm curious of how... I mean, I'm not going to say how quickly the racism starts. J.D. Vance started it yesterday and his own speech and everything, too. But I'm curious to see what Donald Trump is going to say. It's one thing for your vice presidential candidate, but what is Donald Trump going to say? And how are they going to pivot all of their messaging? They can't rely on Joe Biden as old anymore.
He can't help himself, though.
At all.
He will be racist. He will be sexist. It's who he is. And he loves to go off script.
Yeah.
And... if his campaign managers are telling him not to do it, he's going to do it anyway.
Yeah. So,
it's,
I mean,
just who he is.
I every time I hear him speak, I'm like, bless his campaign staff and his writers who write these things. And then immediately he's off. Like when I used to work on campaigns, I know the level of anxiety when you write something for your candidate and they go off script, even just a little bit. And I can't imagine working for someone like Donald Trump that is known to do that time and time again. Who signs up for that?
And he seemed to enjoy the second part of the speech more than the first, although the first was the recitation of his near-death experience. But to me, looking at it, he was being the showman, but he was kind of going through the motions. But then when he got into his, you know, his ad-lib...
His energy changed.
...standard speech, he got happy and nasty, and that's who he is.
It's one thing, you know, of course, the retelling of, you know, that event and that assassination attempt, of course it's going to be heavy and somber. But it's very interesting, and I'm not saying the man should have been excited to retell that story, but he almost got giddy when he was almost allowed to, and he started kind of going off script and was allowed to roam free and do whatever he wants and talk about things that didn't make sense. And thank goodness I almost turned it off. It got to a point where I'm like, I normally don't turn these things off. I have to watch these things, unfortunately. And thank goodness right when I was about to turn it off, he kind of wrapped up, but it was painful and very hard to watch.
Yeah. And the mass deportation stuff.
Sickening. It's disgusting.
Really grotesque.
It's disgusting. And the fact that they clearly pre-planned this. They have the signs printed.
They had the printed signs.
They were printed. And they leaned really heavy into it. And so, you know, it's interesting that people are like, oh, they had a really good convention. They're very united. Yeah, united against everyone else. Not united as a country, which I think some folks thought the assassination attempt would do. And that didn't happen. And they're united. What is clear is that they're united in their hatred and their bigotry.
And they're going to do something about it if they get the power.
Absolutely. Project 2025 is terrifying.
And the power is enormous, unlimited executive power. That's what the U.S. Supreme Court says.
Far overreach. I mean, it's wild to know that this is the world we're living in, just in what happened in the last 2 weeks, what's happening with these court cases. But what's just happened in our world since 2016? There's so much that's happened. And I also think that's part of this moment right now is it's an ultimate sign of resistance that right now when there's a rise in hate crimes and anti-Semitism and white supremacy, the Democratic nominee will be a Black woman. Like that in and of itself, I think adds an extra layer and dynamic is the current political landscape too.
And married to a Jewish guy and considering a Jewish guy for VP. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of targets for Trump and Vance with their anti-Semitism, their sexism, and their racism.
Are they going to walk into those traps?
I think they are. And that's probably. And I think it's going to blow up in their face. I think actually that Kamala Harris is going to win. I think Trump's going to overplay his hand. That's what he does all the time.
Have you seen how large her sorority is? Let Trump say anything about her. The AKAs themselves are going to shut it down.
Yeah, they're going to shut it down, and he's going to turn off, you know, the white independent women and in Waukesha and Tulsa and Mequon.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think he's going to lose more of those folks. He's lost a lot of them already. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in here for Maggie Dawn. I'm delighted to be speaking with Angela Lang, Executive Director of Block on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to be back and continue this conversation. We welcome your calls at 855-752-4842.
I will proudly put my record against his any day of the week.
People are flushing toilets 10 times, 15 times.
Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you. And take it slowly.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's out today. I'm subbing for her. I'm grateful for that opportunity. And I'm very grateful to have Angela Lang in the studio with me. She's the executive director of Block. And we've been talking about, of course, Kamala Harris and the monumental race before us. We have a few callers that I want to take. First of all, Mark from the SAC. Mark, what's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, it's the fight against fascism is getting going to get fun now. I think that what was going to be a kind of a horrible slog, that with the whole rise of the crystal fascism that we're seeing, you know, rejecting the whole Constitution as a, if anything, a deist document rather than a theist document, and the irony there is that because it was a deist document, that it actually freed up the different denominations throughout the country to flourish in this country as they have, and that it is just, it's going back to the paternalism of the Puritans and their rejection of democracy and calling it the worst form of government and saying we have to go be Fifth Commandment and be our fathers, and by extension the government is our father and is supposed to be all-powerful and be obeyed. And I say nuts to that, and that go Kamala Harris. I mean, that I'm looking forward to the fight.
Well, thanks, Mark from the SAC. Nuts to that. I agree with that. Nuts to the paternalism of the Puritans. Jack from Merrimack also wants to get in. So, Jack, what do you got to say?
A couple things. First of all, at one of the clubs that I go into, one of the people that works there was at a Trump rally, and she was just blind with worship of Trump. And we were chatting a bit, and she was, extolling this criminal. And I said, you have no idea what, you know, what you're going to get when you get this guy. I said, well, yeah, I do. And you know, it was very clear that she had no idea what Project 2025 is, or any of the, you know, any of the similar things that's been promised. Second thing is that I heard an interview with a Trump supporter, and he was saying something like, if I wanted to live in a democracy, I wouldn't be voting for Trump. And I'm thinking, what? Well, you know, clearly that's the case, but the thing that he was very worried about was the so-called terrible economy, which, as we all know, isn't that terrible. And I probably should have challenged him and said, look, and I didn't think of it at the time, but I should have said something like, look, can you name an authoritarian government in the entire world that has a successful economy? And it certainly isn't Orban's government, and it certainly is not, you know, communist China that is dependent on pretty much slave labor. And it certainly isn't Russia. I've been to Russia several times, and they have no middle class. And let's not even talk about North Korea. So hopefully the people that are supporting Trump, that are in the middle at least, we'll start to wake up to some of this stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jack, from Merrimack, and thanks for the call. I mean, there is just so much worshiping of Trump, as you put it, this cult-like behavior, that is kind of astonishing and hard to break through. But not everyone who's voting for Trump or leaning toward Trump or even considering Trump is a full-fledged member of the cult. The people who go to his rallies are, by and large, but not everybody is. And I do think the economy is a trickier issue maybe than some of the Democrats believe, because it is hard for people to pay rent right now.
Yes.
It's hard for people to pay insurance right now, either home insurance or rentals or insurance.
Child care,
car insurance. I mean, these things that we all have to pay every day, and my sons bring this home to me. You know, this is just, it's just not easy out there. And to say that the macro statistics are great, like Joe Biden would like to, is cold comfort for people. So I think we need to talk to people where they're at and you know, give the vision that Kamala Harris is of a better economy and maybe some help on rent and things like that. What do you think, Angela?
Yeah, I want to go back to the cult thing for a bit, because I think it's interesting. One, the bandages on the ears during the RNC, like that was very strange to me. And when somebody asked, oh, why are you wearing a bandage on your ear? She said it's in solidarity with Trump. And so it's just that something they just took upon themselves and organized and did. And I thought that was very strange to watch. But what I think is interesting is I do think that because they are quite literally brainwashed in this cult, they don't have a clear grasp on reality. But their reality is their reality. It is true. They 100% believe it, the same way our reality is true, but ours is rooted in facts and science. And they would rather vote basically against their interests, whether they know it or not, whether they know the rights that are going to be taken away to them or not. It's not just Black and brown people and LGBT folks and immigrants. There's going to be other working class folks and poor folks that are going to be attacked as well. But folks would rather vote against their interest than to come together and build a multiracial coalition and vote for a Black woman.
Yeah, it amazes me when I'm driving around, even in southern Dane County, and I'm seeing a ramshackle house. It's got a massive Trump sign in front of it. And I'm just wondering, what is Trump doing for that person and that family? And
I don't get it.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard really to grasp, but it's out there. And this is, like my previous guest, Nancy McLean, was mentioning, this is part of what a fascist movement is. A fascist movement is a mass-based movement. It's not just an authoritarian movement. It's not just a couple of generals in uniform with a couple of tanks.
Right.
There are millions of people behind them, and there's paramilitaries. And Trump's got paramilitaries, too.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so threatening about a potential second Trump presidency, is because we thought we had a wild ride last time. Now it's more sophisticated and evolved, unfortunately. And, you know, it's no longer talking about conspiracy theories. Like, people are talking about, like, would Trump put us back into slavery? Is he really going to deport these people? And that sounds ridiculous on its face. But at the same time, these are real concerns, because it's so wild how fast we're sliding into fascism.
Yeah, it's a steep hill and we could go down real fast.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, The Maggie Dawn Show. I'm not Maggie, I'm Matt Rothschild subbing in for Maggie. And I'm here with Angela Lang, Executive Director of Block. And we'll be right back. And CJ, hang on, we'll take your call.
And take it slowly, ready or not. Yeah. Here I come. You can't hide.
Hey, yo, nobody.
Gonna find you and make you want me. Ready or not. Here I come. You can't hide.
You know the. You know
gonna
the.
Find you.
So, Wisconsin, I am told as of this morning that we have earned the support of enough delegates to secure the Democratic nomination.